chapter 7, Ecclesiastes. I only have two more pages. Probably finish that by Tabernacles. Yeah. Verse 23 is where we stopped yesterday. All this I have proved or tested by wisdom. I said I will be wise, but it was far from me. Now, there's some interesting stuff about Solomon. It is said of him, and there's a lot of proof that it is, that he did. It says, Solomon's wisdom exceeded that of all of the East and all of Egypt. And then, so the question is, and then what is the wisdom of the East? They were skilled in the original meaning of astrology, the meanings and the secrets of divination, with birds and experts in augury. They were able to predict the future with omens, supposedly. Now, I want to go back to in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, or chapter 2, verse 8. I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of kings and of provinces. I got me men singers and women singers and the delights of the sons of men. And where it says as isn't in there, but it's where it says musical instruments. The better translation is mistresses of demons or demonesses. And that of all sorts. Solomon withheld his hand from nothing. Whatever his eyes saw, he went after. And he had the wealth and the intelligence and the time to do whatever was there. Now, the mystery of the wisdom of the East had to do with demons. And that's why there was augury and divinations and charming and all of the other things that. And so it is said of Solomon that he excelled in all of those, and he found out that that too was vanity and empty. And what does that mean? What happens if we're right? What happens if the scriptures, that there was another kingdom before, another people before Adam, that it was the age of Lucifer, and that they ate of both the tree, fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil and the tree of life, and the instant they did, they were spiritualized. That means they're locked in space. They can never get out of space, but there is no regard to time. Why don't we ever see anything about demons here? How come, other than these crazy people like Jane Whaley, who there's a demon behind everything she doesn't like, we never see it. We don't see that here. I've had in 33 years as a believer, I've had one experience where everything in me knew it was that I was dealing with a demon. But when I traveled all over the world, whether it was in some of these weird places I went, there was this incredible power and activity that had no rational explanation. Most of you remember, or some of you remember, when I taught a whole lot on this, that the three things that are necessary to break that barrier between time and space, so we just get into the space only, The three things that are necessary are all three that Harry is guilty of. First thing is drug abuse. Second thing is to worship that kingdom. Worship meaning give it breath. And the third thing is illicit sex. Now, what is the definition of illicit sex? I don't know. But all of the ancient documents that I have say that those are the three. But the primary one is to worship, to give it breath, to give that kingdom importance. Well, if you believe the scriptures, if you believe what it just said, that he excelled, that Solomon excelled in everything, even the wisdom of the East and the wisdom of Egypt, then something transpired that is at once frightening, and yet at the same time, for us, it is nothing to be afraid of. Does anybody have any reaction to all of this?
I just got a cold shiver down my back.
Yeah, Harry was smoking pot one day after he first got here, 1984, 83 or something, sitting in his credit card apartment, driving his credit card Cadillac, listening to a Bible study that he missed on demons. And he had a little experience. Has anybody ever had anything? Huh?
In case you don't believe me, it's real.
Has anybody ever had an experience that they knew was caused by demon oppression or demon possession or spirits from another realm? Or have you ever seen it? Or obviously, you've seen it in movies. How did you know?
I don't know. It's just like you said.
Was it when you were high?
No. I was sober.
Anybody else?
It's too much happened to me when I was high.
No, I had an experience of fear that I thought the demon was in the room.
It was just Jane Whaley?
Yeah. It was when I was much younger.
You were right.
How? When?
Just several years ago, just going through a really dark time. I feel really scared.
I feel totally oppressed.
It was my thoughts and emotions were way out of control. It was like they'd take it on a life of their own or something.
Gary?
Yeah, I used to see it a lot.
Sort of like Jane Whaley.
Huh? It's like all that charismatic stuff we were into where we were supposed to be seeing them and attacking them and doing stuff.
John got the look from the demon of cigarette smoking.
No, I wasn't.
Well, let me tell you, one of the weirdest experiences I ever had, and excuse me for... And again, we don't, in this culture, we don't know anything about this. And yet, the Catholic Church is they have an archbishop whose sole job, and he's a really neat guy, he's a black guy that is just really neat, who his sole job is deliverance of demons. And when you go, and we have footage of it, but of his session, but the people come to a particular place wherever he goes around the world, and the people who the church has suspected of demon possession go into a room, and he's in another part of the building praying and preparing. And you go into that room, and the people act like they're at a charismatic, laughing like dog, like crazy laughing and barking like dogs and laying, running all over the place and feats of extraordinary strength. And but it's not in our culture. We don't see it. I mean, people try to invent it, but it is real. It is as real. I won't go into all the details, but this particular girl, it's a young girl, she was about 15 or 16, and she had been, according to her anyway, she had been taken against her will to a drug house in Pleasant Grove. And she kept calling the radio show that I was hosting, and she'd call every night, and I said, I'd try to pray for her, and I'd just say Jesus. They won't let me. Anyway, long story short, finally, after several days, I was able to talk her into meeting me at a particular corner off the air. And I went to pick her up, and I'd made arrangements to take her to this place in Grand Prairie that had a drug facility, because she had admitted she'd been using drugs extensively. And so I'm driving the old... I don't remember what I was driving. It seemed like... Probably... I don't remember. Anyway, we're going on Highway 30, which then was a toll road. And all of a sudden, she's over... She gets over in the corner, and she's just mewing like a little kitten, and don't let him get me. And then all of a sudden, she rears up and attacks me while I'm driving. And I keep, and she comes down, and I, because I'm not praying very right, because it was weird. The thing that happened next, I got her into the house. The couple that was running the place had got her into her room, and they had gone. We'd gotten all her stuff, and they'd left the room for a minute. And as soon as they left the room, she's sitting on the bed, and I'm on a chair over here, and she rears up again like she did in the car. And her eyes rolled to the back of her head. And she began speaking to me in a man's voice, telling me why I had no right to speak in the name of God because of all of the garbage that I'd done in my life. And there's no way. And the voice was right. It knew all the garbage that I'd done in my life. And that's the only time. And I began speaking in tongues and said some deliverance stuff, and she was freed. But there was the reason that had to be something beyond any human act was because of the knowledge that being had about my childhood and about my life as a young person, in which there was no possibility of them knowing it. But of all the years that I've been dealing with in this as a believer, that was the only time. Now, I've said about Bob Larson, who's, you know, he was a demon behind every door, and I've said he wouldn't know a demon from a bellyache. But it's you can't just take it out of your mind and say it doesn't exist. The scriptures are clear that it does exist if you believe the scriptures. And if you've traveled at all around the world, it does exist. And the reason we're looking at this is it says that if you believe what we just read in Ecclesiastes 2 in verse 8, that he knew more and gave himself over to more than any, and he had more wisdom than all of the people of Egypt and all of the people of the East. And yet he didn't give it any breath, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. So I pray that you never are confronted with this. But this, when you get down to the gut level of dealing with people, you have to be aware. Otherwise, you'll just freak out. And all I'm telling you is greater is he that is in you than whatever being that may be. If you know it. Okay? That's how fortune tellers work. Not the psychic hotlines on television, but the real ones. Because the spirit world can move anywhere back and forth in space. I mean in time, but they cannot leave space. So that's why it's critical that he had to go down in death and preach to the spirits that are in prison. So that he overcame all possible environments, if you will. Anybody have any response? Or you just think I'm crazy?
Well, to me, this kind of brings out what I understand to be the what it is Ecclesiastes is saying, which is that Solomon didn't put a screen up so he couldn't see seething blood. He didn't make things off limits. He experienced everything in time and space. He was completely fed up with the knowledge of good and evil. He exhausted it. There was nothing that he didn't
give himself to do.
Examine. And the end result is all is vanity.
All is futile. All is empty. And remember, the mystery of God is, remember we've said this so often, how far is heaven from hell? It's as far as the eighth day is from the seventh day of Tabernacles. The reason is, it's because the understanding of all is vanity is the last thing before the feast, the eighth day of the Feast of Tabernacles. It's read on the seventh day. Now, what does it mean to say all things, vanity of vanities, all is vanity? It means that it's not just something that you're not going to go after anymore because you've seen the emptiness of it. It means that there's absolutely nothing that you fear. Because it is what you fear is also empty and futile. And so the whole idea of coming to the understanding of the simple statement that vanity of vanities, all is vanity, is the real, the work of Jesus Christ. So that you then can live in a dimension that is without fear, without anxiety, without anything other than peace. Amen? That's the age of Lucifer. We just read. Were you here when we read how Tyre walked in the garden?
Yeah.
Adam wasn't the first one to walk in the garden. It's all over Isaiah 14. It's in 2 Peter. It's all over the place. There was another creation, the age of Lucifer. And they ate both of the tree of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil and the tree of life, and they were spiritualized instantly. And God, in His wisdom, locked them into time. I mean, into space without regard to time. Yes. And their job is to make sure, I mean, they're doing that by God's will, because their job is to ensure that the test that Christ completed is total. There's nothing. There's nothing that he hasn't finished, including that arena. Now, I know this is ooey-oo stuff, but it's far better to at least have an understanding of it. Instead, because in our culture, you fall for all, you know, some of the charismatics believe there's everything they don't like is a demon. It's just common, ordinary flesh. It's just flesh doing flesh stuff. But there are some things that are beyond the capacity for flesh to do and to know. And that's the one thing that, of all of the years that I've been doing this, there's only been one. I was convinced that Larry was demon-possessed, but that's another.
What about, you mentioned sometime about this person named Seth. Yeah, is that, remember that?
Yeah, the instead of.
I remember you talking about that. Was that a demonic thing?
Well, Seth is it's Cain, Abel, and Seth. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, I remember you went to Denton one time and you met somebody and it was some wild encounter and you came back talking about it.
I don't remember.
You don't remember that?
Talking about Lilith?
No, Lilith is... All right, anyway.
Well, the point is it exists and it's fake.
And it exists, and you don't have to worry about it, but you have to be damn sure that Jesus Christ is in you. Otherwise, you'll run with your tail between your legs.
Yes, it's like that story you're telling. If you gave that importance that someone could recount your past, that really was that powerful to you, then you would give that breath, and you would wilt. But you don't give that power, you give the power of greater healing.
Okay, now Rabbi Gamaliel said there were three things for which he prays the wisdom of the East, or the men of the East is what he said. And this, I don't know why I thought this was so funny. First, Gamaliel was like Paul's teacher. He was like one of the greatest rabbis that ever was. Gamaliel and Hillel are considered the two greatest rabbis. Rabbi Gamaliel said, for three things I praise the men of the East. First, they do not kiss on the mouth, but on the hand. Second, they do not tear food with their mouth, but cut it with a knife. And third, they do not take counsel except in an open space, a field, so that no one hears. Now, for some reason, in the middle of all this stuff, to see this whole discussion of Rabbi Gamaliel and why he admires the men of the East just made me crazy. I just thought I had to share that. What was the wisdom of Egypt? When Solomon wished to build the temple, he sent to Pharaoh Necho, saying, "Send me workmen for hire." Necho consulted astrologers and the cunning workmen who were destined to die in the coming year. No, I didn't say that right. Necho consulted astrologers, and he determined the cunning workmen, or the artisans, who were to die within the year. And these he sent. When they came to Solomon, he foresaw by the Holy Spirit that they were to die during the year. So he gave each one a funeral shroud and sent them back to Pharaoh Necho with the message, "If Egypt is short of funeral shrouds for the needs of your dead, behold, they are with their shrouds. So now arise and bury them."
That's a wild story.
For he was wiser than all the men of the Egypt. Did any of you ever read the Egyptian Book of the Dead?
Yeah, I heard it.
It's. Anyway.
I have a copy of it, and I could read it any time I want to.
But you didn't want to. Okay.
Could if I wanted to.
Now, in verse, why don't you look it up and give us a book report, Michael?
Yeah.
All right. All this I have, in verse 23, all this have I proved or tested by wisdom. I said I will be wise, but it was far from me. Now this is the most interesting of everything, because of everything Solomon said, he knew and he understood everything, except one thing. And this is it. Solomon said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. He said, concerning all the ordinances of the Torah, concerning all the activities of the earth, I have understood their meaning. But the chapter in Torah of the red heifer, I've never been able to fathom. Remember when we studied the red heifer? It was the only mystery that Solomon had never understood. The ashes of the red heifer are used for cleansing. If you haven't, if you want to know all about that, talk to your Bible study teacher. All right. We're about done. No, I mean not done, but done today. That which is far off and exceeding deep, who can find it out? And this is why you do not leave you do not leave where you are right now by your imaginations. Because then you're trying to be the counselor of God. It's critical that you understand that Solomon pushed his imagination and the accomplishing of it and everything as far as it could go. And by him he saw vanity of vanities, all is vanity. So he lived in the moment. The moment was the only, now is the accepted time. You cast down imaginations and all these high places that exalt themselves against the knowledge of God. You bring every single thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Because if not, you're going off in your own creation where God isn't. You understand that? And this is intimately in what he saw. Now, how many of you this morning already have left in your imagination? You've got to go to war with it. That's the only warfare that there is. Because unless you go to war with this, unless you find out for yourself that all of your thoughts and your imaginations and your ideas are as worthless as the dust of the earth, therein is where you will live. And because you let your mind go off into these other, thereby you give breath to the thing that's doing it, you give life, you raise the evil one from the dead, then you wonder why you return to the kingdom of darkness. It is so simple, but it is so destructive for you to continue to live in your imagination, to continue to give breath to your ideas, because you will be back down into the kingdom of darkness before you can take the next breath. Unless you don't know that, if you think there's some life or something you're going to gain from your imagination and gelling it or twirling it or whatever you do to it, I promise you, if this is the meaning of all of Ecclesiastes, he gave himself to know everything and to know, and it's vanity of vanities, all is vanity. But you have to know that it doesn't do any good for you. Solomon didn't know it without you knowing it. Doesn't do any good for me to know it. As long as you continue to live in your mind and manipulate with as cunning devices in your mind, then you will continue to live in the kingdom of darkness.
I've heard you say this many times before. It's like this morning, it's like this is the first time I heard. But okay, I hear it. Spirit means
because God wants us in that moment, 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 the now, the dependence, the reliance only on Him for everything. I'm going to wait to study just for Carolyn's benefit. The next verse. I know. I find more bitter than death the woman. I just want to wait until we study that for her benefit, because she'll get so mad she won't be able to spit. Betty's already mad at me. That's why she didn't come to Bible study anymore. This is so, there's no way that I can emphasize the importance of this. Because these are the transactions, these are the deals that you make in your head, in silence. And you make a mockery of the doctrine in doing so. Well, but again, is there something about your mind that you haven't yet experienced?
We should know by now. We let one thought out of the gate.
Were you there when we studied the horsemen of the apocalypse?
Yeah.
You just let out, the stables of horses. They're running wild in your world. And it goes from the great idea to death, because you have to kill somebody else, assassin, to famine, to death. And it goes over and over and over and over again. If you want to continue doing it, that's fine, but you got to understand what you're doing. I don't care what you do, but I want you to know that every time you let an idea out or give breath to it, you're on the white horse going forth conquering and to conquer. You're just a stupid fool. Because following immediately is a red horse with the assassin's dagger. And you will kill everybody in your surroundings, even if you don't let anybody know you're doing it. You will sit in quiet resentment, stabbing them to death. Anybody know about that? Every time I made fun of somebody's idea,
yeah, we've studied it.
It can't. It's fine. I want everybody out there. I want the kids to go and push everything. But my God, you should know better. Unless you think there's some there, then go do it. But be honest with yourself and talk to the people instead of the secret deals you make with the Antichrist. This is why I've screamed and yelled at you for not talking to me. He knew a lot of wise things, and he was able to articulate them in the sayings in Ecclesiastes so that you could see. He was able to articulate them in the Psalms. David was in the Psalms, and Solomon was in the Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. The two books written by the wisest men that have ever lived, both end in talking about death. I mean, saying that is your death is what's critical. He's not talking about your, I know great by and by. He's talking about today. Huh?
Solomon is one.
No, Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived, wrote the two books, Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. His son wrote the book of Psalms. Or at least he's credited with it. We just found out yesterday that 10 others wrote it, but he got credit for it, for most of them.
Irving Berlin was responsible for it.
No, Irving Schwartz was responsible. Take it, big guy.